Hello, Rebels. Before we kick off today's episode, let me ask you a question. What if we could help you unlock your marketing superpowers in one day or less? Actually, to be precise, I mean 3 hours. Yes, you heard it right. What I'm asking you is 3 hours of your time to join us for a brand new intensive experience, our marketing deep dive. One day masterclass that will help you create marketing strategies that capture hearts and mind. And every single masterclass is going to dive deep into one of our favorite topics of marketing. Maybe that email marketing, hiring, or even automations and beyond. If you want to get the fast track ticket to become irresistible, then I'll suggest you check out our upcoming marketing deep dive, where you're going to get 2 hours of hands-on training with lots of exercises and practical group work as well. Plus, 1 hour bonus office hours and Q&A. Oh, and we also have a personalized dashboard and bonus templates to help you apply what you learn in our 3 hours. And just to put a little bow on it, you also get a certificate of completion to show off wherever you fancy. If you'd like to find out what is coming up next and which one is our next marketing deep dive, all you have to do is go to amschool.click/masterclass. There you'll be able to find our schedule with our upcoming masterclass for you to join. On with today's show. Hi, marketing rebels. What if you could have a stunning website tailored to your unique brand, all created in mere seconds? Sounds like a dream, right? Well, WeAllSingers AI website builder is actually a reality. I give it a whirl because you know me. And honestly, I was blown away. Just answer 3 simple questions and voila, your website, complete with copy and images, springs to life. And the best part? You can tweak it to perfection with a drag and drop editor. No coding, no fuss. Imagine unleashing your brand's potential with a website that's not only stunning, but also SEO friendly. Plus, with WeAllSingers AI tools, you can even predict visitor behavior, the closest thing to a crystal ball for your business. Ready to revolutionize your online presence? Head over to WeAllSingers.com/AMS to use the code AMS for 10% off your order and a free domain name. Your dream website is just a few clicks away. On with today's class. Hey, marketing rebels, it's Fab here, your marketing BFF and head teacher at Alt Marketing School, a modern school teaching you how to market to hearts. Today is class in session where we bring you insights and interesting nuggets from top marketing experts who want to make marketing more human and overall have more fun in the process. Today, I will be joined by the one and only Isabel Sachs to talk about everything from breaking into the creative industry to networking to the importance of being authentic to yourself and the way that you show up online. I absolutely love Isabel. She is so much fun. She has such a big heart and she is the founder of Alight Networking. She is a creative entrepreneur and public speaker with over 18 years of experience in everything arts, culture, and entertainment. Passionate about bringing diverse talent into the creative industry, something that I could definitely get behind. And yes, we go back to my past as a music journalist. We dive deep into that as well throughout the conversation. She has worked with a variety of nonprofits, cultural organizations, and consumer-led companies, which really will bring that fresh perspective that she is actually highlighting in our conversation together. And from her time in Brazil, where she started working, all the way to talking about how she brings community together right now, Isabel has been making waves. In 2021, she was listed as one of the top 21 most influential women by Startup Magazine, and she won the DAD Awards as a side hustler. And also, she is one of our top marketers for 2024. Yes, I know. If you haven't grabbed our list yet, then what are you waiting for? Go to amschool.click/top. I repeat, amschool.click/top to see the whole list. And yes, Isabel is part of the list of our top marketers for 2024. I don't think there's anything left to say for me aside from enjoy today's class. have fun, and obviously, may today's class begin. Isabel, I have a confession to make, just to start off right.
Okay.
Go on. I am obsessed with the memes that cleverly, she knows what I'm talking about, Isabel and I Like Networking puts on Instagram to make sure that then people scroll through the opportunities. It's like the little Twitter memes, which will be very relatable if you go to Instagram, which you can find in the show notes or Instagram, you will find them. So my question is, this question is, how the hell do you find them? Do you actually have some time in your agenda that is like, make sure that you have enough funny Twitter relatable things that I can put on my memes, or they just kind of magically appear? What's the vibe? It's very important, memes, you know?
So you know how people follow different things on Instagram, I guess. So people follow fitness influencers, like whatever. I have the online networking Instagram, which is like professional. And then my private Instagram, it's literally 50 meme pages, like comedians and gossip about anything that's like Bravo shows. Cause I love pop culture, but especially sort of like not super, how can I say this in a nice way? Like not even like the top pop culture stuff, maybe like some weird pop culture, like references and things and TV shows. Like, you know, if there was like celebrity, that's like class A celebrities. I'm into like class D celebrities sort of. And I love memes and I laugh. I love like people in the internet are really funny. Anything that happens, like 3 seconds later, there will be someone turning something into a joke. Like there is this woman who is a journalist and she was commentating on the whole situation in the US with the Speaker of the House of not being able to appoint someone. But he was using a bunch of memes to explain it. And it was fascinating. So I just think comedy is good. You know, it's also sometimes making a bit of fun of like the things that sort of like everyone goes through. It's kind of entertaining. It's all very light fun. It's nothing like intense, but I just find it fascinating. So I basically only save this type of content on my personal account. And then when I see something that might be good for online networking, I just send it to my other account. But I love it. I think it's really funny. And people enjoy it, you know, like it's like Monday mornings when we do the creative opportunities roundup. So it's good to start with a laugh. You know, you might as well, if you're leaving your house and you gotta go to work, you might as well have a little joke with you. I don't know, just it's entertaining. But yeah, my friends make really like every time I post anything of quality on my Instagram, they're like, stop that, where are the memes? And so they expect that from me at this point. That's my thing. I almost don't follow humans on Instagram. It's literally like meme accounts, random Bravo celebrities. Yeah. I found this like guy called Blakely Thornton or something. He's hilarious. He makes like the best short videos on anything. He just made one recently about the potential new like people to play James Bond. And he's just really funny. I don't know. It's good. I always tell people, like, you need to follow people that bring you something, you know, either insights or joy or connection. If it's not one of those, don't have that in your feed. Because we're all going to be addicted to our phones anyway. You might as well do it in a nicer way, I guess. But yeah, that's the secret.
I love that. One of my friends, one of my husband's friends, she does memes on a Thursday and on a Monday. And it's very much especially the Thursday ones, if they're not happening on Thursday, she says that she receives messages from people being like, are you okay? Yeah. So it's kind of funny that it becomes their little appointment. And like, I would probably potentially be one of these people that will send the message being like, are you okay? Is everything okay? I love the fact that you said like kind of surrounding ourselves in the online world with things that bring us joy as well. And I will be honest, this is not just to toot your horn, because you're here. Just to give some context for our listener. So one of the reasons why Isabel is here with us as well, obviously I've been following the work at Light Networking for a very long time. Then a common friend, one of our advisors, Raz, put us in touch. And overall, I just love what you did. So I just got in touch and we found a way to, again, I'm going to say collaborate together. You talked about collaborations before we jumped on this chat. And we found a couple of simple ways to collaborate. And you said as well that for other collaborations, you found that one of the beautiful things about some of these things is that you can do a lot more with a lot less work. And the reason why it really jumped out at me to talk to you is because I've been following Alight Networking for a very long time. And I love that everything you do is very much serving clearly the creatives in a way that is just giving them opportunities, is giving them ideas, is giving them support to take that next step. And I find that this kind of work is amazing, but it also can take so much. And obviously, that's where I'm kind of want to be before we get into class in session. The next section, I just wanted to chip away a tiny bit more and ask you a bit about that, about, you know, the line of work when it comes to Alight Networking. How are you finding the balance between obviously giving so much? We talk a lot about giving in this podcast, funnily enough, because obviously it's all about marketing to heart. But obviously being able also to run the business, to run the work and to make sure that you can grow and scale without kind of going absolutely berserk, because that's what we're all trying to do. Obviously doing better for others, but also be kinder to ourselves. So how do you find the balance where everything that you do is so much about giving and about supporting others?
Yeah, so it's funny. Like I am someone that I think throughout my professional life has worked a lot to sort of support almost other people's dreams. Like I started working when I was 17, sort of in the creative industry. And then when I opened my first company in Brazil, I was quite young. I was like in my early 20s. I don't remember. It was a while ago. But when we did that, I think I was like 23, maybe, or 24. But basically, I only felt confident to do this, I think, because the artists that were around me that I was going to represent and produce their work, I really trusted their vision. So I used to joke that my company was actually like their names, Dreams and Enterprises. It was like Hafa's Dreams and Enterprises, because they would tell me like, we have this idea. And I'd be like, oh my God, yes. And for a long time, that would drive me, you know, to see that we could do that and realize that artistic vision for someone else. And obviously see the impact it has on audiences. So I think I need a bit of that feedback to realize that the work that I'm doing is doing something positive, not just, you know, to the world in a little way. I always felt like that was part of my job as a human to do that. My great uncle was someone who's like very idealistic, and I think he fought for most of his life for a better world. And he's someone that I really always looked up to. And he worked in different space. He was much more like in politics and policy and the sort of sustainable development world. And his wife was a literature professor and also an incredible supporter of other people's dreams. And so I think they were really formative in my life. So that was always kind of part of my understanding, like if you get to choose what you're gonna do, you might as well do something that's sort of positive if you can. That said, it is really easy to let yourself be taken advantage of, not by other people, but almost by yourself. You get a little addicted as well to the feeling like it's like you attach a lot of value, your value to providing value to other people. And that, I think to me, that balance was the hardest to detach from understanding that my professional self has its place, but my other self, everything else that makes who I am, has value on its own inherently. So I think that's been like a big, it's not an easy thing to achieve. I think it's an ongoing conversation, but with Alight Networking, it was born out of a necessity at a time, like it was born in during COVID, and it kept, you know, changing or evolving into something else, because it was never born to be a company. It was never born to be anything. It was going to be a one-off thing that was 3 months and that would be it. And it took a lot of my life by storm. And I had to kind of confront the fact, and we were just talking about this before the podcast started, that I can't be everything for everyone. Like no one can. So that is something that now that I'm older and have had a company before and all of that, I have that vision of like, okay, there's you know, this is the remit, this is what we can do for people. And outside of that, what we can do is potentially signpost to other organizations and other resources, because there's a big need for support in many different areas of our lives. But if we're talking just about the creative career industry in the UK, there's tons of different needs. There are tons of different groups that need very specific type of support. And I think most organizations that are trying to address that are doing it in slightly different ways, which means that they are going to support some people, but not others. And you just have to kind of accept that. Yeah, when you're really tired, if you have nothing in the tank, you can't give anything to anyone else either. So yeah, it's a lot of breathing and not responding to things right away, which I used to do when I was younger. Now I'm a lot more like, this is not open heart surgery. Everything will be fine. Like
people can, and it's hard to be, sometimes people can wait when you see that email. You're like, I could respond right now, but I find that for me as well, being a bit of a practice of like, I'm just going to let this simmer unless it's, you know, it's something that is very timely. It kind of also sets expectations, because if we are always on the pulse, it's great. But then in the other person said, that's kind of how things feel. And I am the first person to be very squirrel head. So I need to literally go and dive deep into that. And I want to jump on one more thing before we get into the main crux of this chat, which it's kind of similar to what you did. And just to bring our own experience to the table briefly, I almost gave up on the scholarships for our cohort, which was really painful, because the whole idea of the scholarships is to tap into making marketing more accessible for everybody. That's literally a big value for us. But being very honest, because sake of honesty, dear listener, you know, that's how we roll. I am still on my own, at least at the time of recording, and I was on my own then. And I was swifting through applications for paid students and these complimentary applications. And it was quite a few. And the first round, we had about 20. The second round, we were kind of averaging around the 30 just for that. And I had to stop and be like, I genuinely can't do this, because I'm already doing all the course for the other things. I have to vet. There's an extra element of vetting and understanding and identifying. And it was really painful, because I was like, I need to run this thing and I don't even have the time to look at everything that is coming my way. And so that's where I started, and to reach out to people with a couple of alumni that came up first and other people as well, and being, we would love to give your community that aligns with our value, that have the needs that we need, some spots, if you can help us amplify it, and also just kind of helping us refine, you know, the candidates together. And in different varieties and in different like level of commitment. And I love what you said as well, is just understanding also how, what I really like when it comes to partnerships and collaboration is meeting people where they're at. If somebody's really busy, I'm like, okay, which kind of work can you do? And I can take on the rest. But even just offloading some of that work means that we were able to then continue this side of the business that I really wanted to have. And I wouldn't have been able to do it by myself. I wouldn't, like, now I have 7 cohorts, and every single cohort had at least 50% of our students so far have been from scholarships, different types of scholarships, including the ones that we have with our partners. And that's amazing. And I wouldn't have been able to do that on my own. So sometimes it's that reminder that, as you say, and I love that you said that, it can get really addictive to give, because I see the experience that we have with our students, which I want to say, the lovely students that came from you, they all graduated. We have some lovely pictures. I'll send it to you later on. And they were super happy. And you know, then that's the thing, that we all feel happy. We see they're making a difference. And sometimes it's hard to be like, okay, wait a second, but how can I make things smarter for myself? So thank you for mentioning that, because it's when you are naturally a giver, when you naturally want to make that difference and people around you, as you say, inspired you to do that, it's almost half the battle not to kind of go back to that too. With that in mind, I actually wanted to get into the classing session, and I wanted to focus on one area that for me is really important to talk about at the beginning of 2024, at time of coming out, that's when it's going to come out, because I don't think, putting my predictive hat on, Isabella, I got plenty, I don't think the things are going to change as much when it comes to people finding new opportunity to get into the creative space. I personally have found, so I want to set the scene, so we'd like to ask your opinion on this. I personally have found that just working with some of our students that are looking for a career in marketing, and also changing jobs as well, with a couple of those as well, that has been really, really tough and really overwhelming. And I wanted to hear from another community, which is much bigger than ours, what has also been some of the feedback that you have gotten from your own community, just to set the scene about some of the things that we can teach them and help them with when it comes to breaking into this space and industry if you're just starting out?
Yeah, well, I literally posted about this, I think, on LinkedIn maybe a few weeks ago. So when this comes out, it's going to be a few months ago. It's very tricky because when we describe, when people say the creative industries in the UK, it also involves things like IT, tech, software. Like it's a very big beast that have very different types of companies. Comparing, for instance, the theater industry to the film and TV complex industry, they're already completely different in size, in scale, in, you know, purchase power, in salary ranges, in what type of skills you need. It's insane. Then then there was like this big service research, like, oh, 1 in 5 jobs in London are now in the creative industries. Yeah, but they were mostly in IT and software, which are things that fine, but that's not what a lot of the community that I work with wants to do or even thinks they can do. Because I think that is one of the things, right? People don't really understand what the possibilities are. And this industry changes so fast. I always give this example. When I started working in the music industry in 2009 or something, we didn't use Spotify. There was no such thing as thinking about music downloads. Like we were like still recording and selling CDs and live DVDs. That was like a big product to sell. Like you would go to the store and put your CD and DVD in it. Like, you know, it was a completely different ballgame. Like things change so fast. Like now, if anyone wants to work in the music industry, you'll know a lot about data, about algorithms, about how that all works, you know, other types of royalties and rights. So I think everyone needs to understand if they're coming to the industry, one, that it's huge. There's a lot of potential, but two, not, you know, you can't just take everyone's like big stats or big experiences like that as the rule, because when you start to look at the nitty gritty of things, depending on the subsector you want to be in, that's going to be different. Because you can also do marketing for a big organization that is not creative in itself, but that's still a creative job. So I would say the first thing is to definitely try, and this is hard, but to not try not to compare too much your journey with someone else's, because there's not such thing as like a one path for things. Like there are, of course, some traineeship schemes in different things, but for most of the people that I know and most of the people in the community, their career is a little like up and down and then diagonal and then a bit back. And it's like it's a game. But I agree that especially for certain groups of the population, it's tricky. You know, like there was this whole thing in 2020 on Black Lives Matter and la la la. And, you know, we're all defending like gender equity and equal pay, you know, and you still see that this is huge. The gap is still big. In certain areas, it got worse instead of getting better. Vogue Business did a huge research a few months ago as well on the state of the fashion business and how most people who identify as Black or were not like straight, able-bodied, white people didn't really feel like they could belong or there were many choices. And now there was this big scandal that everybody in the caring group, all the creative directors are white men. So there's still a long to go. So I guess all of that rant is to just put this into context and to say that if you want to get a career in the creative industries, amazing. One thing is that you're going to have to fight hard because it's very competitive and it's sadly not the most open in terms of how you don't really understand what you need to do sometimes, like, or where you need to go. It's not always that transparent, which is something we try to change. But the second thing is, I think there's a lot of talk about imposter syndrome, but sometimes you will be facing systemic barriers. It's not just all on you. So you have to go in doing your absolute best, but definitely go and find people to be in your corner, find a community, because it can be really tricky, you know, even when you're in it, to navigate, to get out from one side to the other, to pivot. You know, you're going to hit hurdles that everybody hits in careers all over the world. Yeah, you definitely have to be resilient. But final addendum of all of this, I think starting out your career in any sector with maybe very rare exceptions, it's very hard. You know, you hear I hear a lot of podcasts. I listen to a lot of podcasts that are not about the creative industries. I like to listen to different things. I love listening to things about tech and about businesses and entrepreneurship and then sports and gossip and things like that. So, but I just think it's important to read and hear stories from different worlds because you might get ideas and you also learn a lot from other things. There was this one podcast, and so it was a guy graduating from a top university in the US in business, trying to get into finance or whatever. One of those things where you imagine like smooth sailing, and he was getting rejected right, left, and center. And the person who was responding was like, well, that's kind of how it is. Like, it's tough, you know? So remember that this is not just on you or just not on the creative industries. Of course, we have specific barriers in our industry and in specific issues, but I think getting into something else, in something in new industry or getting your first job, it's always hard. Not impossible, but it's always a bit tricky. So it gets easier, I think, once you're in it. Yeah, you gotta push a bit. So breathe in and go on.
I love that. And one of the things that really resonates with me, looking at, I've been in marketing for 15 years, is how much things have changed and continuously change. And also that can feel sometimes the hurdle of being, you know, do I know enough, or is this where I want to go when things change, skill sets, needs, and things like that. And it's really funny because it made me think about the fact that in 2011, so as some of the dear listeners that have been quite loyal will know, I used to be a music journalist, but also I started as a music PR, like an internship. And I remember that the most cutting edge thing in 2011, everybody, was sending SoundCloud samples to the magazines instead of sending the actual CDs. That was cutting edge. So just to give an idea, and now we're looking at things that we're like, for any kind of creative industry, as you say, the skill sets are different and the priorities are different and the needs are different. But this is why I guess I wanted to go into the class in session with this. So thank you so much for all of the nuggets as well. And I wanted to ask you, we're going to give you 1 minute. What is the one thing that you can teach our students or listeners in 1 minute or so when it comes to, once again, breaking into or just kind of working inside the creative industry? One thing that they can think about, as well as all the wonderful things that you said already before.
The one thing that I think I can teach, but also that everyone should have, in my opinion, is the most important thing to define if you're going to succeed or not. One of the most important things is proactiveness and showing that. And I think that is a really important skill to have in life for anything you're going to do.
Love that. Can you give us maybe a couple of examples that you would think, like, that you've seen that you count as that proactiveness? Because I know there are so many.
Yeah, I think I am from Brazil, so and my family is very mixed, but like in terms of nationality, background. So everyone was, a lot of people were raised in slightly different ways, but I was really brought up to learn that you sort of have to make your own path. When I was starting out in my career, I didn't know anything. I remember I had this boss and she told me like, oh, someone is producing this theater production, etc. Do you want to go be the assistant producer? And I said, oh, I've only been like production assistant and blah, blah, blah. I have never been like the most important, like on set. She's like, you're never going to learn unless you try it. So you're going to F up, but you have to be confident that you can then address what you F up and still make it happen in the rest. Like, so just go and figure it out. And that was an amazing thing because I was petrified, but I was just doing it and I was moving. And I think this is very important. Being proactive is about trying to find solutions to problems, like on your own, and understanding that you can find solutions. But sometimes the solution is not all depending on you. And I think this is really key. Sometimes the solution is like calling someone, asking for like advice, like figuring out, like going and Googling like a YouTube tutorial, like figuring a few things out. But if you show to anyone you're working with that you can problem solve on the go, that you can figure things out for yourself up to a limit, and then you maybe have to show this to them, you're going to be like so much better, I guess, of the competition. Because first, it's really great when we figure things out for ourselves. Like it is, especially when I was starting out, I would feel so proud when I managed a big problem. I would be like, oh my God, I solved this, you know, like, or I figured this out, like whatever it was really exciting. Gives you a lot of confidence as well. So I think it works in many ways. And depending on where you grew up or what type of, you know, education system you have, because I've seen this be quite different, and also what type of boss you've had before. Maybe you have been told to not even try. But in my opinion, once you try to figure out problems and you are proactive around finding solutions to things, that's your first question. When you see a problem and something goes out wrong, instead of saying, oh my God, who's at blame? Or are they going to blame me? Just think about like, how can I solve this? Or like, how can I get the closest to a solution? Because it's all you can do, really, right? Like pointing to people and saying what the problem is doesn't help anyone, especially when you're like, I worked a lot in live events. So you don't have time to do that. You need to figure that out right now. So it was a really good experience, terrifying, but yeah. When you're on the like the goal, it was really good. So I'd say do that. You can do that in your life, in your day-to-day life, you know, with things like you really want to buy this new furniture and you don't know you're going to be able to assemble it yourself. Try, you know, if you can't at all, then you call someone. But like, do your best, like learn how to do this, because we learn how to do things on our own all the time. Like once you, when you first get your first flat that you share with a friend, you're learning a lot of things, you know, you're figuring it out usually on your own. Like the first time you do your laundry all on your own when you're like, I don't know how years old. So all those things are important for you. It's just, we need to apply the same for our careers. So I'd say that that is a really good skill to have, especially if you're an entrepreneur or you're a freelancer. This is like life or death, you know, for your business.
I love that. It reminds me of an example that I think we've already made on the pod. So that I think is so great. And sometimes it's similar but different. On top of the proactiveness, which also comes with time, because then you get more confidence to try and solve other problems that maybe you didn't even think you could before. But also, is there balance between pushing yourself out of your comfort zone and obviously being realistic about what you can do? Case in point, one of our clients for the agency, just to give you a tangible example, they said, oh, could you please do a whole audit of our MailChimp and sort it out. And I've been working with ConvertKit as an email marketing platform for 7 years. I know MailChimp, but I hadn't touched it for a while then. So I came in and it all made sense. And I was like, it might take me a bit longer. It might take me a couple of chats with support if something is not super clear. It's a bit outside of my comfort zone because I will need to learn a few new things, like some e-commerce sides of things that I didn't know, but I know I can do it. And I think that gave me the confidence to be like, yeah, I can do this. Might take me a bit longer than I would like because I'm not 100% sure of all of it. It's something that I know I can add to my skill set and it can challenge me a bit. And I know that in another conversation that we had with Rochelle Robertson, one of our graduates, she said that so many people, which I'm sure is a stat that you also know, don't even, especially women, I will say, don't apply for jobs unless they know 100% of the skills. And, you know, I know a couple of other male friends that have the same. And that's the thing, 70%, 50% can be enough if you're willing to learn the rest. And I think we don't talk about that enough. So that is not the proactiveness, but that came to mind when you talked about that too, you know?
No, but it is really about that. It's about showing that you're going to hit the ground running. And that means that this is what I know and this is what I don't know, but this is how I intend on learning this. Or this is how I intend on fixing this skill set that I'm lacking, you know? And that can also mean like saying to people, listen, I am dyslexic, so it's hard for me to spot typos in copy. So the way that I get around this, if this is part of your job, is to then make sure that there's someone else in the team that can review things with you and have this thing or that process that you don't need to do everything in like 2 hours, that you have at least like an hour break between versions, et cetera, et cetera. So you create a system which also may well involve other people. So being proactive doesn't mean being an island that does everything yourself, because no one can do that. But it is about finding the solutions, even if the solution is delegating, finding someone else, asking for support, you know, building a little community around you. Those are all solutions, but it's something that you're initiating as well, right? It's not just like waiting like, oh, no one told me what to do, so I didn't do anything. So that, I think that attitude is not helpful, whereas everything else that you do is better. And like asking for help, learning that you need help and being able to ask for it, that's also being proactive. You know, it's not just like pretending that the problem isn't there.
That's actually very, very true. And I think I love that you mentioned that, because my next question to all three is about something you learned from somebody else. So I wanted to ask you, especially again, when it comes to the work you're doing now, but maybe even in the past, you mentioned some old bosses. Is there, it can be a tactic, it can be a framework, it can be maybe like a mindset even, that somebody else taught you? So something that you learned from someone else that really stood out to you when it came to, I'm going to say, your journey and your career.
So I started university at 17 and I got a 2-week like placement doing something. And then I got a 6-month paid internship at sort of this third sector organization that worked sort of at arm's length of this, you know, organization, commercial organization. So the job itself was pretty dull because, you know, not great. It was in an office. It was like very traditional, the 9-to-5, the office closed. Like I felt like a clown, but I attempted. But I had the absolute best boss, like one of my best. I had 2 really great bosses. She said something to me that since that day, I've applied for everybody that I ever worked with. And then I feel it's really great. So one thing I'm going to have to say too. So one thing that she used to do is she would say, before she would give me a task and she would be like, do you know how to do this? And if I said no, she would sit next to me and she would teach me until I said, and I had to say, okay, I got it. And then once I said I got it, she was like, okay, so I don't actually want to see you effing this up, because if you told me that you got it, like, I don't mind explaining it to you, but when you tell me you got it, I trust that you got it. So tell me when you've actually learned it so that I can delegate things properly to you. So that was one thing that you can say that you don't know, but then you need to be willing to learn and you have to take accountability for being like, okay, I've learned that. And the other thing was, I was saying like, I had to do menial tasks, right? I was an intern. That was my first office, like proper office job. I had done like other odd jobs here and there, but you don't have a proper office job usually before. So I had to do some random things like at the bank and at Xerox and figuring out and some forms and picking up the phone to speak to some donors and pass them over and transfer things. And she said to me one day, she said, you know, there's no such thing as a small job because everything is connected here. So if you don't do this, this doesn't happen and this doesn't happen and this doesn't happen. Everything you do, you need to do it as if it's the most important task in the world, because in a way it is. Right? Like, and a lot of society works in this way. Like, if no one wants to take the trash out of the city, like, we're screwed. You'd be like, oh, the trash just magically disappears from my bin every Monday. It's not like that. You know, like, there are all these jobs that maybe you don't see or you don't even think about on a daily basis that keep your world going. Right? And I think it's the same at work. And when I started working in production in the creative industries, that was so important because I started like from the ground, you know, like being a runner and blah, blah, blah. But I never thought of my position being pointless because I knew that even though I was doing the most stupid job at the, like what people call stupid, I knew that if I wasn't bringing food to people that had been on the set for 12 hours, they would fall apart. You know, like if I didn't have correct type of batteries at all times when people needed the batteries, like that would disturb a lot of other big things happening. So it doesn't really matter the hierarchy. So you need to treat everyone as if they're all doing the most important job because collectively they sort of are. So those were really, really important lessons that I've had and really good, I think, management strategies as well, because you actually give people autonomy and ownership of their work, which is in my mind best to work. I mean, I responded very well to that style.
Especially from a delegation piece, we don't talk about that enough, like the way of delegating and then the feedback loop and giving the confidence and kind of giving them the responsibility in a way of being like, now you are the person that can take this on because you know, you feel like you understand what you need to do next. And sometimes we don't think about that. We don't even check if not often, but I've had in the past managers or people talking to me, and I had to realize that I had to tell them, have you asked this person if they know what they're doing? Have you asked them if they know how to use this tool? And there's that assumption as well, which is kind of like a knowledge gap that we have. And the final thing I want to say before I get to the next question is that you made me smile when you talked about the smaller jobs. And I remember that one of the things that this is a very UK thing, but I used to work for Nando's. So I don't know if you know. Chicken. So when I came to the UK, I was working for Nando's as I was pursuing my dream of becoming a music journalist. And people were like, how can you be so excited about delivering this chicken? I was like, it's my job. I get paid to do this. I am going to deliver the happiness of the chicken to everybody who wants it. So I very much, that has been kind of weirdly ingrained to me from a very, very long time, because I also knew what the end goal was. And even if it was a means to an end, I was like, this is still making a difference and it's still making people's bellies happy. I love that you mentioned that as well.
And you also learn new skills. You learn different things. Like, you always learn something from those experiences. So you know, everyone has worked a little bit a lot of us have worked a little bit here and there, like retail or catering, all these odd jobs. But you learn a lot from it. You learn about communication and organization and blah, 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 and being on time and, you know, connecting with other colleagues, all of those things that kind of make up afterwards how you work as well. And also what type of work you want to do or not do, you know?
Very true. If you want to interact with people, if actually interacting with people is not something that speaks to you, I think you don't know until you try. And I love that. You talked about learning. I'm going to flip it on its head. What is something that you unlearned recently, Isabel? And how did it improve either your life or your work?
Oh, that's hard. I'm trying to learn so many things. I mean, I guess the main thing that I've been trying to unlearn for most of my life is about it's about like relationship with my body and what it is that I put, like how much attention it has. Of course, I was a very sick kid. I have some weird like health conditions. And then by the age of 15, 16, I developed anorexia. And in my experience with anorexia wasn't like, oh, and then I had help and then I got healthy and then I never worried about it again. You know, it has been very much up and down, up and down. And then in a few years ago, I did this new coaching program and it's been really great, but it is something that I think in the past year, something that I've become a lot better with, of being like, okay, like, you know, not, because it's very easy for you when you're stressed to put all that stress and like try to control what you can control using your body, like trying to then control your body. And my body doesn't like control, especially not, it gets sick a lot and I'm allergic to many things. So I get like reactions out of the blue and I don't know what I'm reacting to. So like it's super annoying for most people around me. But it's about like seeing that like, okay, this doesn't mean that my body's disgusting or that I am fragile or that, you know, my health sucks and my body sucks and everything sucks and I, you know, like it's removing a bit the value of that, of like, it has these conditions and that's just the way it is. But that's been, yeah, that's a big thing. I think anyone that has ever dealt with any type of chronic disease will probably, well, I don't know, but might identify a bit with that, of like always having that sort of the back of their mind and like trying to change the dialogue that you have with yourself and how that impacts or doesn't impact your life on a day-to-day basis. But that's the first thing I thought of. I don't know, maybe not as helpful to everybody, but
no, I think it's super helpful and thank you so much for sharing. It's good actually for people, as you say, we don't know who's going to resonate with, but it will resonate with some people. And all of these things, our relationship with our mind, our body, my relationship with my mind has always been something at the back of my head, pun intended. Yeah. You know, they affect also how we show up on the day to day, the confidence, the energy that we have in so many ways. So because it's how we talk to ourselves. And that conversation is one of the gazillion conversations that we have. So it's super relevant. And thank you so much for sharing that as well, because even talking about it and voicing it can be good, but also, you know, even in the catharsis of it, it's still going back to it. So that's a great thing to, I find personally as well, some of these things we are constantly, as you say, unlearning and finding new ways to unlearn and then kind of catching ourselves. So, you know, it's a very good one to be reminded of. So thank you.
You're welcome.
And now, time for quick fire. So we got classing session is over. It's quick fire. I'm going to give you options of a few things and you're going to have to choose which one to keep with the this or that. Are we ready?
Yeah.
I already know the first one. I think I do. Spotify playlist or podcast?
Spotify playlist.
Voice note or text?
Voice note.
Carousels or reels?
To create or to see?
Good point. Let's go with to create first.
To create carousels for sure.
Which I think I knew. To consume?
If it's comedy, reels are really good. But it's very hard for me to stop it. So
it's good scroll.
And bad. So yeah, I have all the like checks and balances of the phone, so I stop. I don't ever work with my phone next to me, by the way. It's always like somewhere else if I'm working. Because if I go in, I'm lost. Because as I mentioned, my feed is very curated to only make me addicted to funny stuff, you know? So when there's nothing to watch on TV, I'm like, okay, I can look at my phone for 10 minutes. Because that would be hilarious. So
actually, with that in mind, TikTok or YouTube?
Oh, YouTube. I'm a YouTube girly.
Nice. What kind of YouTube then, before I jump to the final one?
Honestly, again, my YouTube is, if you go on my YouTube homepage, it's gonna be like some stuff from like Vox and the School of Life, a bunch of climbing videos because I really got into that in the beginning of the year, some random stuff like the Mattelane specials, I don't know, Chicken Shop Date, Watch What Happens Live, which is a Bravo thing. So it's a mix.
I also
really like, so like there's I follow some Brazilian channels that are like the history of, I don't know, religion, like, or how this word came to be, like some really, I really like watching that usually like late at night. History stuff.
I love that.
I don't know.
This is like a little peek inside your brain. I'm obsessed with this. I love it.
Yeah.
My final this or that question, which I think I know the answer for again, is memes or GIFs?
Oh, no, that is so hard. That's like choosing between my babies. But I'm going to say memes. I still think the word, like, the written word has, in the way it's used, has more impact. And I think it's also really hard to do. It's really hard to be that expressive and that funny in such short sentences.
True. So. True, actually. It's a bigger challenge. I like that. Isabel, thank you so much. Before I let you tell us a bit more about where the people can find out more about you, I'm going to ask you one more question. And this is a power. I'm going to give you a power. Okay, Isabel, you currently have the power to broadcast one message onto everybody's phone. And if you did that, what would that message say?
I literally tell everyone to go out and go meet someone for a coffee, face to face, like for a bit. I feel like we've been losing a lot of connection. Forget that people are people. And just go do that. Go connect with someone. I think it's a good networking strategy, like for network branding messages. But I really do think that, like, when you get out of your own head a little bit, talk to someone, just do that. Don't watch Friends, like, go and see a friend. It's better for you.
I love that. That's actually a good one. I love that. Isabel, thank you so much. Thank you, obviously, again, for all the work that you do. Thank you so much for somehow being willing to enter my world.
This was difficult. That's the thing.
You did great. There is honestly no expectation. It's all about coming in and sharing whatever comes into that beautiful head, which worked really well. If people want to find out more about you and Ally Networking, remind them again where they should go.
So Ally Networking is a career platform. We have our website. So it's allynetworking.uk. Over there, you'll find links to all of our socials, our newsletter, is, I think, the best way to be in touch with us directly, is where we send the most amount of stuff. And we're going to have some updates there soon as well. And then we have our Instagram account, which is the most active of our social media. And
it's with the memes.
ILI Networking with the memes. And yeah, you get to see a little bit of my amazing meme selection. If I could, I would just post memes all day, but that's not very helpful. So maybe a second account one day. So that's where you can find me. And if you go to ILI Networking, we also have our LinkedIn page, and then you can find my personal, well, my normal LinkedIn page as Isabella Sachs. And if you want to reach out there, I usually write about the issues in diversity and inclusion and access in the creative industries, and sometimes some other fun stuff as well, but I talk a lot about that. So yeah, you can come connect with me over there if you so wish to network more.
I love that. Well, thank you so much, Isabel. And one more time, dear listener, thank you. Please remember to be kind to yourself and others. And remember, yes, I know, that true marketing speaks to hearts, not just minds. And until next time, class dismissed.